Episode 20. What's up, man? Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Those of you that don't know, this is Jeff.
That's me.
Did you see the Facebook short that I did last week?
Yeah, where you talk about the logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool picture, man. I think you came out with the best picture.
I don't know. It's hard to beat Mike. He looks like he's supposed to be there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
And, you know, the thing is when I told him, like, hey, man, I want to get this. I need a headshot of you so we can get this logo. He's like, perfect. I got a crown. And I'm like, crown? Like, I thought it was some sort of slang. You know what I mean? And he goes, I said, what do you mean a crown? He goes, you know, like a crown, like a king wears, jewels and gold. And so I was like, all right. And so he put it on. And the original, I mean, he looks kind of goofy, but then when you know, Corey moved it to black and white, yeah, I think you're right. I'm like,
yeah,
it fits.
It's solid, yeah.
Like Big Mike knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, and I like the positioning of, you know, wearing a crown. That's got to be centered and at the top, you know.
And yours, I don't even know. Like, I was just going to, you know, just needed to make it. Just playing around. So I just went to your Facebook, and I think that's like an archived photo, like way down there.
So you creeped on me.
I did.
That's what that is.
Creeped. I do.
No, yeah, it's good. It's a good logo. I like it. Yeah, because I remember you asked me, you're like, you know, like, we're going to do this logo. So come up with something. Like, if you want to wear sunglasses, wear sunglasses. If you want to wear a hat, you know, wear a hat. You know, just something, you know, like that you would want. And you told us how it was going to be. And I'm not really a picture guy, you know. Most of that Facebook stuff was, you know, back when, you know, I think that picture was, I was working out of town. And a lot of times I would, like, kind of post random stuff from while I was out of town.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was coming home after a long week and, like, I was looking pretty rough. So I just, like, took a picture of myself and posted it on Facebook, like, glad to be on my way home type deal.
Yeah. And you definitely set the tone as that, as that guy.
Yeah.
Held by the norm.
Yeah. Well, and the part that really was the most dead on accurate was when you said, like, hasn't showered or, like, doesn't care to shower. Because I guarantee I needed a shower. Oh, man. I shower in the summer. In the wintertime, I'll be honest with you, man. I don't waste a lot of water in the wintertime.
Really?
I mean, like, I shower, like, I don't like, skip weeks or anything like that. But, like, I don't shower every day in the wintertime. That you don't. It's kind of weird, ain't it?
I shower twice a day religiously.
Do you sweat, though? You a sweater?
Yeah, but
I'm not. I don't sweat, and I've got dry skin, so the more I shower, the drier.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But even then, I cannot get up and start my day without a shower. Like, I will plan on getting up 30 minutes early just to take a shower if we have to. Even if that's the only place I'm going. Now, granted, I work out in the morning. 5-6 days a week, so that's a given shower. And then I try, allergy wise, to take a shower at night, so when I go to bed I have all the pollen and whatever off of me.
Yeah.
So I can get a decent night's sleep.
And I should do that more. Now, if I work outside, like in an area that's, you know, I got dusty or dirty or something like that, but on these days where, like, you know, we don't have to do much, we don't get out of the truck much, yeah. Brittany gets a guy that hasn't showered crawling in bed. So, hey, man, you know.
Poor Brittany, man.
Well,
Carly is the, well, I'm the other end of the spectrum. Like, it'll be, hey, we're going to go grab some deep real quick. All right, let me jump in the shower real quick. You know, so it's not uncommon for me to take 3 or 4 in a day, if I don't work. I find it, you know, I think that's my relaxing, like my time to be alone, time to kind of, because I'm definitely, shaving is definitely one of those things where I kind of like set everything up and get it ready. And so I think shower is just a little taste of that, you know, kind of thing.
Now, I will say, now, more than likely, you like your shower, though, that you have here. See, we used to always grade, like the motels we'd stay in when we worked out of town. We always graded them on like, all right, here's the criteria of whether a motel's good or not. Like, if you walk in there and they got all these crazy decorations and like it's really expensive and they got all these big pillows and stuff, like you might think, oh, it's a nice room. No. The criteria is the first thing you do is you go in there and you turn on the shower and like good pressure and like a good stream of water, because when you're working out on the road, you want that end of the day shower. Cause like you said, it's that relaxing time. There's nothing worse than crawling into a shower and it's just like terrible. And you're like, this is pointless.
Dude, I got a 12 inch shower head with a Bluetooth speaker in it.
There you see, you're doing it right. You're doing it right. And then, but the other criteria was, you know, it needed one of those little refrigerators because like we would always like have stuff that we need to keep refrigerated.
Well, I don't know. Microwave. That's the thing. Who doesn't have that anymore?
You know, anymore they do, but this was, I mean, dang, this is 10 years ago when I was working out on the road like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 10 years ago.
So.
But now.
And we were like in East Texas and West Louisiana and Western Arkansas and stuff like that. So the areas we went, you know, it's not like you had a lot of options. So.
Not resort. Not casino resorts with prime rib and
that was a special time. And surprisingly enough, I got super excited because when I walked into the bathroom, I was like, "This is glorious shower! It's a huge walk-in shower. It's like bigger than like one you would see in someone's house, you know, and like this big glass wall." And I was like, "This is great." And then you like turn the shower on. It's like just this little shower head like over here. It's like pointed at this, so it's like. It maybe throws water down on like one little corner. Like you could have made that shower like standing room only, and it would have been like the same.
Because, that's terrible.
So like most of the shower was like you were standing around not getting wet if you were over there. So that's one of those like it looks good, but it's not good. Which is what honestly it's what the world is all about these days. The world cares about how it looks, so you can take a picture of it. Post it on social media, and you can say, hey, look how fantastic this looks. Now assume I'm having as good a time as you can imagine in this, enjoying this thing. And it's like, no, man, it's terrible. Like, I see people, like, post stuff, like food. They're like, look at this food. I'm like, I guarantee that food tastes terrible because the good-tasting food doesn't look cool.
Oh, no.
Man, it looks not soggy because it's got
not at all.
Delicious stuff all over it.
Yeah. That's one that I honestly, that's...
Like, those sheet cakes are the worst cakes on the planet. I don't care if you can make it look like the Batmobile. It's not going to taste good.
Sheet cake?
Yeah.
The chocolate sheet cake?
No, like with the, maybe I'm thinking of the thing. I'm talking about the cakes that people make for birthdays where it's like they put that thick icing. It's not even really icing. They shape it and they can make anything out of it. I call that sheet cake because it's a sheet of icing.
I gotcha. But, no, I thought you meant like that big.
I'm talking about the ones
because that's like the most plain, ugly.
Yeah, no, you're talking about like cooked in a pan, taken to the potluck, sheet cake. Yeah, no, I'm not talking about that.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about those fancy ones that you see. And it's like,
please say, man, we're going to have to end this podcast right now.
Yeah, be careful.
No, but in all honesty, though, one of the many things I hated about the cruise I went on last summer was the shower.
Yeah. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Get that part right. Yeah.
I agree.
But no, that's probably at my house. This house I'm in right now, it's kind of one of those transition houses. We're just in it till we can save enough money to try to get something different.
Is the shower any good?
No, like terrible. Well, the shower, all right. It's a two bathroom. There's a bathroom in the bedroom, the master bedroom, and that's the one I use because Brittany occupies the other bathroom completely. And Josie, you know, we get baby baths in there. It actually has a good shower head on it. And all, but the tub's like old and it's not very big and all. So it's still not like you got a lot of standing room. The best shower I've ever been in is, a friend of mine, his brother-in-law, bought a cabin around Broken Bow. He actually bought the land and had the cabin built. Well, he was a football player, played at OU, then he played for Baltimore, got drafted to the Ravens, and then he went to the Redskins and then finished up at Atlanta. He was actually on the team that blew the Super Bowl, man. But
every time.
Yeah, I know.
Every time.
Family. So, anyways, long story short though, when Chris had this cabin built, he was planning on using it. He was like, "I'm getting a good shower." So, he actually had like this big like steam room shower installed at this place. So like not only are you taking a hot shower, but like there's these little nozzles on the wall that are like shooting out steam, and then you've got water hitting you from multiple directions. And like when I got out of it, I was just like beet red from head to toe. Like I feel like my body had just been purged. So it was nice. Like it was the best shower ever. But I mean, he knew what he was doing though. He's like a dude who after a football game was like, that shower is
dude. And you know, locker room showers,
yeah,
are the best. You know, because there's nothing fancy about them. I went to one locker room shower when we were visiting somewhere in college, and the visitors. It was literally a pipe that came out, and it honestly looked like, I think this was a special knob, but it looked like someone had just twisted a salt shaker head on the end of it. That's all it was. But you turn that bad boy on, and he was like, you know, and hands, I mean, just, I like to be power washed, you know.
That's what you're wanting. I mean, like, I think most guys would agree that, like, a really hot shower with really high pressure is kind of what you're going for.
Yeah. So I don't need it too hot though. My wife, man, she takes like scalding hot showers. Yeah. Like boil hot dog in that water. I guess. I don't know how she does it, because I even try and get up that high and it hurts. Hurts me. Mm-hmm. But her and my daughter, both, man, you'll walk in and you know, when you walk into like a steam room that's been legit, not the steam hadn't died down, but it's been steaming the whole time and it takes your breath away and you can't breathe. That's what it's like going in the shower after they do. So I don't get it.
Nope.
But anyway, man, we mentioned on this podcast numerous times the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
They've been making some moves, man.
Making some noise.
They picked up Tyrod Taylor today.
Yeah.
Is it Tyrod Taylor?
Tyrod Taylor. He's got Jarvis Landry now. They picked him up. So they've got Josh Gordon, Jarvis Landry, and I think, is it Corey Coleman? Or is that the...
I don't know. All I know is Landry's not a slouch. He's probably top 10 receiver.
Well, what he's really good at is he's that guy that you can throw to a lot. Yeah. You know, he's not going to bust it for a touchdown every time. He's going to get you yardage. He's going to get open. He's going to get you yardage.
Which, good possession honestly, receiver.
Yeah, which honestly, in my opinion, you know, Tyrod Taylor, looking at his, you know, history, I think that's what you're going to see out of him is him throwing at Jarvis Landry. Because I hated Tyrod Taylor as a quarterback because he had Sammy Watkins and seemed like he would never he didn't have the courage to just chunk it downfield when the window was a little bit tight. It's like, you just got to trust that guy's going to go get it.
Yeah, man. Sammy Watkins is good, too.
Yeah. And
he's a free agent, too, now.
And I can't stand it when a quarterback, like, shirks back on a deep ball because he doesn't trust that his receiver's going to make a play. It's like, man, that shows that you don't have confidence in you or your receiver. And if you're not going to be able to throw it downfield, I got no use for you. Because these guys that want to, like, only throw to, like, wide-open receivers, and if the guy's not wide open, they're going to bust out with their legs and try to get a play. I hate watching that. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but I think.
But they got Duke Johnson's a pretty good running back.
Well, and here's the thing. They still have four of the top five picks.
Yeah, they've got a lot of picks.
I mean, two in the top five.
And honestly, and they've been, you know, they've been drafting early for a while, and they didn't blow all those draft picks. So they've actually built a pretty decent team over here.
Yeah, you got Joe Thomas playing left tackle, which is a good, solid player to build your offensive line around. Josh Gordon, I think, man, hands down, if you take the drugs and alcohol and he actually puts in a legitimate season of work, could probably be one. You could probably call him the best receiver in football from a talent standpoint.
I think. You can't take Josh Gordon and take the drugs and alcohol out of it. You would have to take the punishment for drugs and alcohol out of it, though. I don't know if that's something he's in control of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think he's even kind of by his own admission said, like,
But what I'm saying, though, is from a talent standpoint.
He was doing it drunk, man.
That's what I'm saying.
He was showing up faded and going out and just like
he talked
burning
about
people
catching an Uber
like
back to the house to take shots of whiskey to get back to the stadium to hang 150, 200 yard games on people.
Yeah,
that's with quarterbacks like Johnny Manziel and Brian Hoyer, you know? So I think a good quarterback like Tyrod Taylor, the dude they just picked up from Miami.
Jarvis Landry,
you know, kind of pulling some of the coverage off of him.
Yeah.
And then I think personally they pick up old Barkley from Penn State, who had just a stupid good combine, and a tackle like Connor Williams from Texas.
Yeah.
You use the top two picks to pick those guys up, and then build your deep, you know, fill in the gaps with the rest of the draft. And they were in games last year. They didn't win one, but they weren't getting, like, you remember when the Lions just went 0-16?
Yeah.
They were getting killed.
Yeah.
Every game was a blowout. This team, I mean, they're just losing by, 5 points, 10 points here, last minute, carry the lead into the fourth and then kind of give it up type thing. I think there's a shot at it. Our buddy Chris said he's thinking about getting an AFC champion tattoo. 2018 AFC champion.
A premature
tattoo.
One?
Before the season starts, I said, you have a good draft, man. I might tell you to go for it. Because they are that team that I think is turning the corner. And we could see them. The problem is they've got two powerhouses in Baltimore and Pittsburgh that they have to play twice a year.
Well, I think you have to look at it realistically, too. There's just a lot of ifs in this scenario. First of all, you got Todd Haley coming as a new offensive coordinator. You might see that as a good thing.
I don't like that.
If you're a Browns fan and be like, oh, man, he's had Pittsburgh rolling. And then you see Tyrod Taylor coming, you're like, this cat's way better than what we've had in the past. And it's like, well, but look at Tyrod Taylor. Like, what have the Bills done with him? Tyrod Taylor, he's one of those guys that you always get excited about him, but he doesn't really produce.
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor needs to.
Excuse me, man.
Well,
Homer got me.
I don't know. It's kind of.
But that's just what I feel about it.
It's kind of hard to gauge Tyrod Taylor because he was at the Bills and they're notorious for mismanaging things.
They are.
That quarterback, I don't even remember his name. That's how unforgettable he was. But that guy they brought in mid-season for the start.
Peterman,
yeah. And just,
yeah, that
just,
guy can throw some picks.
He obliterated any shot of ever playing in the NFL again with that one
He
game.
Had to have set a record.
It was such a
I think he had more
outing.
Picks in one game than, like, even Blake Bortles had, like, on, like, a season.
Well, but that's the thing. The thing is typically around the 2 or 3 mark, you start to get yanked. Whoever that coach is like, yeah, just leave him in.
No, man, he was going to send a message, I guess. I don't know, because – it was just ridiculous because everybody, even before he put Peterman in, was like, this is the stupidest midseason thing ever do. You're not even that far out of it. Like, it's not like they were, like, doing terrible. They were still kind of in the mix.
He's probably doing what what's-his-name did for the Pats. Sitting, what's-his-name, in the Super Bowl, the cornerback.
Malcolm Butler.
He sat him to prove a point, and the dude who replaced him was getting toasted all night. So
that's just never a good thing to do.
It's hard. It's hard to be a head coach in the NFL.
Prove your point in the offseason.
Well, exactly. NFL too.
Cut that sucker at the offseason and replace him with trade him or something.
Yeah, you can't.
You don't sacrifice the Super Bowl because you're just. You're just going to try to prove
exactly.
A point.
You can do it in college because those kids, A, they can't go anywhere, and B, their NFL career is dependent upon that.
Yeah,
upon actually playing, so they can't. They a guy like Malcolm Jink or Malcolm Butler, he'll be a free agent eventually.
Yeah,
and once he's a free agent, see ya.
Here's the thing, though, about just to get onto the Browns is I think when you see like a team that makes a big turnaround, like the Rams did, where they go from being terrible to like being one of the best teams in the NFL, or somewhat like what Philadelphia did, in the last year or two, a lot of things start clicking, and sometimes, you know, it's a combination of you've got the right personnel and you finally get the right coach in there. Sometimes it's not even got anything to do with the players, and it's more about, like, do the coaches and, the management of the team, are they kind of all on page together? You know, like, right. Is management giving the coach the pieces he needs and the places he needs and all that stuff? So a lot of things kind of have to click for one of these big turnarounds. And as much as I would like to see the Browns, you know, kind of make that turnaround, I mean, just unfortunately, because they've been just so mismanaged for so long, and it seems like they can take anything and turn it into something terrible, they're just going to have to prove it to me. And so I'm trying not to get too excited about them, because, you know, they're a division, you know, rival, I guess you could call them, since they're in our division, being a Steelers fan, but, you know, they've never been a big rival. But I've always wanted them to be good, because there's only one team I can't stand in our division, and that's the Bengals. And I think that anyone who does like the Bengals has, like, that should be a profiling thing that you can use against them.
Dude, everybody hates the Bengals. The Bengals and the Eagles are, like, just a spite. If you don't live in those towns, everyone hates you.
Yeah, the Bengals.
But the Bengals, I think, is more about the team. Like, people hate the team. I think the Eagles, people hate the fans.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen the Philadelphia Eagles football team do anything that would make you hate them. But then, like, then when I heard about what the fans are doing, I was like, has it always been this way? And people are like, yeah.
Dude, they threw batteries at Santa Claus. Like, Santa Claus comes in for, like, a charity Salvation Army thing, and they chunk batteries at the guy. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
And it's not just the Eagle fans. It's just Philadelphia in general.
Yeah.
It's just outside of Rocky, there's nothing good that comes from there.
Yeah.
I mean, you say cheesesteak, but...
I mean, they cracked the Liberty Bell.
Anyway.
Can't trust these guys with nothing.
I know.
They probably got drunk, so they dropped it. Or threw it down to see if they could make it break.
Well, on behalf of the Browns, though, you have the talent. You go 0-16 again. That, I think, the head coach and his entire staff should be fired. I think the entire administrative office should be fired.
At what point do you quit firing head coaches, though? I mean,
then you go in and you force the owner to sell the team.
They actually just had a dinner for fired Browns coaches. Had a dinner together.
Did they?
Yeah. They had
how big a room was that?
Oh, it had to be a banquet hall, man. They had like 16 coaches.
I'm just telling you, talent-wise, they're there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there to win some games.
And I thought they've had some talent. They've looked like they've had talent in the past. I mean, granted, their quarterback's never been great, but, you know, Brian Hoyer's not complete trash. Like, you ought to be able to win some ball games with Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer went to Arizona. Bruce Arians was coaching him, and he did terrible.
Well,
I think he just pulled one out when he did well with them those couple of years. Yeah. That's just my opinion. I don't think he's... He's good. Now, what's that set up for the draft, though? Because you have Mayfield talking like he was going number one, and if anyone's going to...
I don't know about Baker. I don't know where he fits.
I think he's Manziel 2.0.
Think about it this way.
I think he'll have a little longer career.
If you're going to draft him early, that means you need a quarterback, so you probably want to start him pretty quick.
Yeah.
So if he goes early, he's going to be going to a team that has a quarterback need. If you have a right now quarterback need and you've got that early of a draft pick, do you spend it on Baker Mayfield?
That early? No. The guy I like is what's his name? That dude.
You know who's going to cash in on Baker Mayfield? If he slips down the draft board to some team that doesn't absolutely need a quarterback and can maybe put him on the bench for a year. And then their quarterback goes down midseason, and Baker Mayfield comes out with that chip on his shoulder, ready to prove something, and like wins him a handful of ball games.
Oh, I got a buddy. I got a buddy who's a big OU fan. He wants him to go to Denver.
No, that'd be all right.
I think, you know, and I think it's, I just, I don't, you know, the now thing we, is.
What did you think was the biggest flaw in his game this season?
This season?
In his football play. I don't care about how a person's personality is. Like, just his play. What did you see?
I mean, he threw the deep ball well. I think when you took the deep ball away, he wasn't able to put together drives.
Yeah.
He
did you like his receivers? Did you feel like his receivers were adequate and that he wasn't having to make plays with receivers that were?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think his receivers are hurting him. I don't think it's a case like him. Like, I think Rosen got hurt by his receivers.
Yeah.
I think,
cause you could make the case that, you know, Mason Rudolph, his receivers made him look good all season.
Yeah. No, no doubt. Here's my thing. If I'm going to the draft with Baker Mayfield, I'm going in with the same reservations I have with guys like Cliff Kingsbury, all the, just, you know, I'll give you the whole list of Texas Tech quarterbacks. Cause I think that's more of the offense that, I mean, Lincoln Riley's a Texas Tech guy. And he implements that run and gun type stuff. And I think that's just, you know, you look at his stats and what wasn't one of the Heisman. I think all he proved is that a guy like Mike Leach and his offense, his air raid offense could be, this is what it's going to be able to do with top caliber talent.
Yeah.
And I think you know, you took the deep ball away, which, you know, Georgia started doing. In the second half, and they couldn't do anything. I mean, they went a quarter and a half without scoring, while Georgia just, you know, came back and eventually, you know, won the game. But if you just made him run the dink and dumps and tackled his receivers, and they didn't get any breakaways, or he didn't have to get to hit that deep post route all game, you had a shot of winning him. Iowa State did it to him. Texas almost did it to him. Texas shut down the deep ball and made him actually put together sustained drives. And they almost came back from 20 points down, you know. So, and that's with, you know, subpar with a freshman quarterback and a not so good sophomore. And, you know, one play in the fourth quarter pretty much swung that game. So I don't think he's going to be able to, I don't think he's going to be having any success in it because he doesn't hit the out routes very well. He hits the post trap. He throws the deep ball very well, but, safeties make up space a lot quicker than they do in college. And so it's not that deep ball. You only get one or two shots at that deep ball in a game in the NFL. Whereas in at OU, especially against games like Kansas and all that, where that deep ball's there 90% of the time.
Yeah. See, that goes to the point I really wanted to make about him, is it looked like when Georgia tightened up those windows he had to throw in,
mm-hmm.
he just didn't have the accuracy for that tight of a window. And in the NFL, those windows are going to be even tighter. And things are going to look open that aren't open.
Yep.
Because you're not prepared for how fast some of these guys are, especially linebackers who can close out laterally. You know, you're getting to be, you know, there's more and more fast linebackers. But so for me personally, you know, I think he obviously needs to work on his accuracy. Now, I didn't watch him enough, and I'm not a football guy. That most of what I know is because I listen to what other people watching him say. Like, I listen to the commentators. I listen to, you know, and that's just something
that's not accurate this year, man. They rode that dude like a—
Yeah, but in the Georgia game, like, you could tell something was off. And I heard a few different guys talking about, you know, when the windows kind of closed, it looked like he struggled to hit those windows. So, like, I don't want to try to sound like I'm really just someone who watches the tape and sees it all happening. But I do try to listen to what other people are noticing. And from what I've heard, it sounds like, you know, he's definitely going to have to get that accuracy there. But, you know, what makes a guy that doesn't have high expectations coming out of college be good, you know, like an undrafted Kurt Warner, or, you know, these guys that get drafted like a Russell Wilson, you know, it kind of becomes, it's not so much that, you know, the things that, you know, would make a good NFL quarterback, like being able to hit the tight windows and stuff like that. It's being able to make smart plays and be able to create plays and things like that. So really it kind of comes down to like getting some experience with defenses and knowing what you can and can't do, and not being stupid with the football.
But every time he's faced a legitimate defense, and they've adjusted. I mean, Texas, I mean, he only hung 29.
Yeah.
And Georgia hung quite a bit at the beginning. But it wasn't even him. I mean, I think the running back had 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, I think in the NFL, here's the thing about the NFL. And I think Colt McCoy's 10 times more accurate than Baker Mayfield because he can hit those windows accurate-wise. But arm strength-wise, he just doesn't have enough zip on it, so the ball moves slower. And again, the NFL is the best. I mean, obviously, we all know it. It's the best of the best. Yeah. So you're looking at an all-conference defensive player of the year is a special teams player in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not that special.
You can't be just fast.
Exactly.
You can't be really good but not fast enough.
Exactly.
You've got to have all
And I don't think Colt McCoy could start in the NFL. I think he's a great backup because I think he could easily come in for Kirk Cousins three games and get you two of the three or maybe three of the three. But by game four, when you've got enough game film on Colt McCoy to figure out how to stop him, it's done.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow, same thing. And Johnny Manziel, same thing. Johnny Manziel came out and everyone thought this was it. He won a couple games and then defenses started to figure him out. And once they did, it was done. And I think that's what it's going to be. I think it's just, dude, Matt Leiner came in and had great success till they, you know, you have to see him. See how, you know, see what guys capitalize on, see where guys missed. And once, you know, you have these D coordinators. D coordinator isn't a football guru these days. He's a algorithm, probability and statistic, you know, mathematician guru who plays the trends and develops this odds are type thing. And then he calls plays based on that. And that's how he smokes people.
Yeah. Well, I'll say one thing I think goes in Mayfield's favor, and that is his effort. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys who's scared to try to make the play. He's not going to be scared to try to do something. And, he's going to fail sometimes and he's going to win sometimes, but it's those guys who like, they don't have a memory of anything bad they've ever done. That just somehow seem to keep finding ways to move forward. You know, like Brett Favre threw a lot of interceptions. Ben Roethlisberger has some terrible games. Guys, there's a lot of guys out there who made a lot of mistakes, but their mistakes, nobody remembers them because of all the huge things they did.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's got an opportunity to be something like that. But, you know, he's not – when he gets to the NFL level, he's not going to be an exceptional athlete.
No.
That's going to definitely be a knock on him. But I always think that anybody who's willing to put forth that much effort and who has that big try factor, they're going to try. They're going to put a lot into it. I always give them guys the benefit of the doubt. So I'm actually kind of pulling for the cat, even though he says some things sometimes. But I like to see someone that's got that kind of try and puts that kind of effort into whatever it is they're doing. Because even if they peak at mediocre, they're peaking. You know what I mean? I like that. I like to see people who are giving it everything they got and putting it all out there.
I want them to fail miserably.
Well, you're a Texas fan, first of all. Let's go ahead and put that out there.
Okay, I'm a Texas fan.
So not only do you hate
Sooners, I hated him. No.
But you probably especially hate the Sooner of all Sooners, Baker Mayfield. Who
I hated him at Texas Tech, too, before he even transferred to OU.
Well, haters want to hate, Josh.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah.
Sorry. I hope
you're
still he fails
miserably.
About
Vince Young and Colt McCoy, man.
No, Colt's doing well. Vince, here's the thing, and I told Mike this. I don't care. Once you
Vince
go to the
Young,
NFL.
Did I say Vince McMahon? I may have said Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
I think about the WWE a lot.
XFL, baby. XFL. Yeah. No, but you know, the thing is I don't know, someone said, you know, hey, well, you know, he's short, and he is. He's not even.
Is he 6 foot or is he like 5'11"?
He's barely. I think if he's 6 foot, it's 6 foot and a quarter.
Yeah.
He's shorter than Drew Brees, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the marker of like kind of that tip. And then, you know, but he's like, well, I never had a ball batted down in the Big 12. It's like, you don't have J.J. Watt coming on the end every time, you know. I mean, that's the thing. The other thing is his hand size is small. And that's and here's the thing with hand size is in the NFL, You have to have big hands because that ball's getting swatted at by 300-pound men all day long.
Yeah, isn't that one of the things they say about Russell Wilson is, like, not just his ability to run, but his hand size is, like...
Yeah, his hand size is huge.
Yeah, like, he's huge. Not a
so
big
is
guy.
Drew Brees.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of one of, you know, so when they look at short quarterbacks, Doug Flutie had huge hands too. Mm-hmm. So even though they were shorter in stature because they had those big hands, and I mean, it's not hard. Go out and take an NFL football, throw it around a little bit, then turn around and go get a junior high football and throw it around. And you end up throwing it better, mm-hmm. you know, just because you have better control of the ball.
Yeah.
That dude from Wyoming has like big old ape hands, man. Like almost 11 inches. You know what I mean? Like he's sitting up there with, like, you know, basketball players, yeah. you know, and that's the other thing too. I mean, I think he's going to be the Carson Wentz of this draft, yeah. is that dude from Wyoming.
See, my biggest concern is who's going to replace Ben, because we've got Landry Jones at backup, and he's proven to be inept, in my opinion. He's not a good backup even. And he was one of those guys that looked good on paper.
Yeah, they all do. I mean, that's...
But, because he had all...
Well, I mean, think about it. Aaron Rodgers fell to number, 24 in the draft?
Dude, Tom Brady, was...
Okay, but Tom Brady...
Drafted way late.
Number sixth round.
Yeah. And he was kind of scary looking because he was so skinny and small.
Well, but that's the thing. Tom Brady... Now that's just...
They probably picked him up thinking he's going to be wearing a headset on the sidelines his whole career.
That is hands down proof that if you can read a defense better than anyone in the league, you can smoke anybody.
Well, and that's the other thing is, like, you know, how good is, you know, Baker at that? That could be, you know, what makes
him... I don't think he is, though. That's what I'm saying, because I think Georgia, I think defenses in the NFL in college were able to figure him out by halftime and shut him down. Like, he wasn't able to you know, Tom Brady. Okay, here's
I
the thing
like
with
Georgia just kind of like took over the game because they established the run and took the run.
They
away
did,
from
but the defense turned around and took away everything that he had in the first half, and he couldn't adjust. See, the thing is you look at the good quarterbacks in the NFL; they have a bad drive, and they adjust. Mm-hmm. All right, this is what Tom Brady, Roethlisberger, Manning. They have a bad drive. They adjust because they say, okay, they figured us out. This is what they're going to do to counter it. This is what we're going to do. It's a chess match is all it is. And
when you're trying to read things that they're trying to disguise.
Exactly.
They're trying to sell you on something they're not doing half the time.
Exactly. And the Big 12's not doing that.
No.
You know, but that's the thing. Texas did it, and they shut them down. Outside of covering the tight end one play, they would have won that game. Georgia did the same thing. You got to look at the fact that their MO was get up big in the first half, you know, double digit leads, and then basically just maintain that lead because he couldn't adjust fast enough. And in the NFL, they make adjustments quicker, so you don't have that 20-point lead to pad it. And if you can't make the adjustments quicker than they can, it's going to get on you. Blake Bortles is a perfect example of a guy who, intangible-wise, has them all. Yeah. But he just can't figure out how to win the game, unless he's playing the Steelers.
Blake Bortles. I don't know what to think about when I see that guy. I just think that somewhere down the line, he's related to Joe Flacco. I feel like they're the same kind of guy. Like, it's like this dude who can be so great, but at the same time, it's like, this dude is garbage and you would not want him as your quarterback.
I know. And then Flacco, man, Flacco is hands down the smartest dude I've ever seen. Because you remember the year they won the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
He turned down an extension. Won the Super Bowl, and it was, I mean, Hunter, he was making more than Tom Brady and Peyton Manning at one time.
Yeah.
Dude, Joe Flacco's not $100 million a year quarterback.
No.
You know, but now the man, you know, but the thing is they're throwing money at court. Kaepernick signed $100 million deal. And that's another example of, I think he's a better athlete overall than Mayfield. And they figured him out quick.
Yeah, his, you know, he spent some time, this was before the whole kneeling thing happened, he spent some time. I can't remember who he went and practiced with. It was some quarterback who had retired already, but working on his mechanics and his release and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Like he had some like flaws in like his ability to throw the ball. Like what made him successful was people weren't ready for him doing all the different things he was going to do. But once the defense gets ready for that, and the NFL figured that stuff out pretty quick, and he was like going to be forced to throw more. He was like, well, that's actually what I'm not the best at. That's
right.
And so,
I think that's where Mayfield's going to
fall.
I don't
agree with blackballing him just because, you know, he took a political stance and did something that most people in the United States hate. I mean, I'm neither here nor there on that. But, what I do think though is like another reason he's not on team is because they don't want to take his quality of quarterback skill and that baggage. And so, like, sometimes I'm like, hey, you know, like, I understand people think, like, you see all these trash quarterbacks out there, and you're like, Kaepernick's better than that guy. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think he is. I never thought he was that great. I thought he had, like, a really good, like, season or two. And then once defenses started figuring him out, I'm like, you mess around and make that guy your starter for the whole season, you're going to have a good season for four games.
Yeah.
You're going to have four.
Dude, the 49ers,
you're
going to
be the Kansas City Chiefs.
The 49ers are hands down the luckiest team. And picking up what's his Garoppolo.
Yeah. Yeah, he should be
that
pretty good.
That guy is ridiculous. He's still undefeated. It's a starter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing is like you said, Kaepernick is good. He's just not good enough to – really, he's not good enough to make up for his girlfriend.
Yeah.
His girlfriend seems to be the biggest problem in all this. And you know, my thing is – you know, and you have it, and he's not the only one. There was that guy in Miami. His fiance or wife or whatever, spouted off a few too many times, and they just cut him. Like, dude, your production on the field is not worth the headache. Because we've got to field questions, we've got to, you know, answer.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, for everything she does, and you're not putting out enough on the field for us to justify that effort.
And that's why Lonzo Ball can afford to be just okay in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Because no one wants to put up with his dad.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, we'll see. I think you give him 3 years to adjust to the game and then see how he does. He can pass and dribble.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think his shot's going to be, I just think too many people are going to be able to get into his shot.
Yeah,
for him to be just a high scorer, but I do think he passes the ball phenomenally well.
Yeah,
and so if you know, but I don't think he's going to be superstar. Like, I do think you could find somebody else that doesn't have his dad attached to him.
Well, I mean, if what the Lakers have done so far is any indication of what they're going to do moving forward under Magic Johnson, that is, Magic Johnson is just trying to move the pieces around. He wants to make one huge play at once. So, like, there's a chance we don't see any of these young guys that he's got right now.
Dude, he traded Ray half his roster to Cleveland already.
Yeah, like, Magic Johnson has, like, this grand scheme, it seems like. And, you know, he's going to be graded on his performance on whether or not, like, he's able to pull it off. Like, whether it works or not is beside the point. It's whether he can even pull it off, because it seems like what he's doing is he's just going to try to, like, go all out on some big guns all at once.
So who's he go after?
I mean, he's like...
Can't be LeBron, because LeBron's eventually going to get to the point where you can't... He's not going to be the big three. I mean, it's already...
You think he's still, like you think talent-wise he's regressing?
No.
Because he's like
no,
tearing it up. Right,
I don't think
now.
I don't think talent wise he's regressing. I just think that, you know, Jordan, he's always compared to Jordan. Jordan is LeBron can't elevate his team to his level the way Jordan did.
Well, LeBron's not Jordan. Jordan's not, and LeBron is not Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, none of these guys are each other. They're
no,
totally different
it's,
dudes.
But it's
and,
not a it's not a it's not that it's not They play different styles of games.
If you told me that there was a 6'9" guy who was built like a crazy athletic guy who could play any sport he wanted,
okay,
and he can not only score at will, but he can also play defense, and he can also pass as good as any guard or point guard in the league. I'm like, there's nobody better than him then, because he's
okay.
They're just.
But then if I told you there's a 6'6 guard with a smooth as butter jump shot who can lock down any point guard, but on top of all that, every player on the floor is going to play better because he elevates their game. You've got an individual player on one side.
I don't know if I 100% agree, because I used to watch those Bulls quite a bit. And generally what happened was the other team looked better the whole game. Michael Jordan kept them in the game the whole game. And at the end of the game, Michael Jordan won the game. And the reason the Bulls were able to do that was because the rest of the team, even though offensively they could be a little bit sketchy at times, because, I mean, you're talking about his number two guy was Scottie Pippen. Who? Scottie Pippen was great, don't get me wrong, but Scottie Pippen was not great consistently. Your next guy in line was like, in the early days, it was like, what, like B.J. Armstrong? And then after that, it was Tony Kukoc?
No, man. You had Horace Grant.
Horace Grant was not an offensive, like, juggernaut.
It doesn't matter. But
the Bulls were built to play defense, and Michael Jordan was built to score. I mean, and play defense. So the thing that made Michael Jordan so great.
John Paxton, Steve Kerr, those guys.
They could shoot. Like most of the times when you would have used those guys, Michael Jordan got the ball.
Two players in the NBA you don't want to make mad, and that's Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. Like, you played better out of fear.
I 100% believe that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. So I'm not trying to argue for LeBron in that case. I'm just saying LeBron is.
He hadn't been able to win without bona fide superstars.
Look what he's been beat by, though. I mean, when he went down to Miami, granted, they. You know,
Dirk Nowitzki, that wasn't a talented team.
Go back and look at it. Mark Cuban bought a championship that year.
No way.
He couldn't even keep those guys. They had a squad.
Better than Bosch and D-Wade?
They had a squad, man. They were deep, head to toe, with a lot of good players that they couldn't afford. And Spurs? They had to get rid of them the next year.
Spurs?
The Spurs are solid. The Spurs,
the Spurs are always Spurs solid, out. But they also beat them with an ARP qualified team.
An ARP qualified team that consistently found themselves as the champion in the Western Conference over and over and over again. So, like,
dude, he would have lost that other one.
I'm just saying, like, don't discredit.
I'm not discrediting LeBron. I'm telling you, he's top 10.
And getting beat by the Warriors. The Warriors are like this thing that the league wasn't quite ready for. Like, they went out and they put it all together.
No, it's LeBron's fault.
So
it's LeBron's fault.
Yeah.
He essentially went to Miami with D. Wade and Bosch, said, this is a big game. Free agency is a joke. We're just going to go wherever we want and win championships. And Golden State said, okay, guess what we're going to do? We're going to put together three studs, and we're just going to go get probably the best player in the league.
Here's the thing that I think makes Jordan and LeBron so different. LeBron wants to get other guys the ball, and he wants to win the game because his team beat you, and he's not trying to just take the game over. Jordan took the game over.
No, man. Do not make LeBron to be like this just epic team player.
I'm not saying he's
an epic
team player.
The man has had more GMs and coaches fired.
You're taking it wrong. I'm not saying he's the best team player. I'm saying in a clutch moment, LeBron wants an assist, not a shot.
Phil Jackson made Jordan do that. John Paxson.
Jordan always had the ball in his hand. And here's the other thing about Jordan. I think LeBron is cold-blooded, and he has definitely worked things to get in the organization, but there is not a meaner teammate to play on the court with than Michael Jordan telling you how terrible you are and how you better not screw up, man. He had those guys scared.
That's my point. That's my point.
Yeah.
And by the way, LeBron.
Michael Jordan was an awful human being.
But by the way, I'll give you that. He was, but LeBron wants an assist at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Because he's too scared to shoot it himself.
Probably.
That's what it is.
Who
he's
knows?
Not clutch. He's
cold though, man. He's
no,
the
he's
best.
A great he's a great player, and he's the best in the world still, and he will be the best in the world probably for the next 3 or 4 years.
And I'm going to throw this out there, and this isn't just recency bias, because like I'm all for looking at the NBA when I was a kid, and because I remember thinking like the NBA lost something, because when I was a kid and Jordan was out there doing it and I was seeing all these teams and all these superstars, it seemed like when those guys got older and I look at the league and like the superstars are like Tracy McGrady, Allen Iverson, and Vince Carter, I'm like, you know what? This ain't the same league. This league just isn't as good. Now Tim Duncan, obviously he was that good, but like, and I was seeing like even as good as like Steve Nash and these other guys were, I was like, the league does not have the quality of talent league wise.
Well, because it's diluted.
Then it had whenever Jordan was having to do it. There was just really really stacked superstar teams out there in the 80s and in the 90s.
Yeah, because there were less teams.
But I think right now, this league is the most talented it's ever been in the history. League is flooded with talent. Nah. Now, granted, it looks like they're all
scoring
on the same teams.
Talent.
Dude, the West only has like two or three teams that aren't good.
Yeah, but no one plays. That's the thing, man. James Harden going to win MVP this year probably.
Yeah.
In the 80s? What's Curry's dad's name?
Dale
Curry. That's about it. Yeah. Cause he doesn't play defense. And back then you could not play defense.
Well, it was different though, man. It was a different kind of defense. It wasn't the same. The things that you could do back then, like the physical play, the hand
checking. But that's what I'm saying.
And even like the style of defenses that you could run, they're illegal now. Like it's become, I mean, the league is what it is because it's what they wanted it to be.
Yeah. No, I'll give you that. But,
I mean, if these guys had to, like, get physical and, like, play defense, you think they wouldn't?
No.
Because, honestly, like, you're seeing some pretty good, like, fluid defenses out there. You know, what the Warriors do on defense is actually pretty solid. What, you know, even, like, with the Rockets, I know they get kind of trashed for not being good defensively, especially because James Harden, like, doesn't play much defense. But they are actually set up now. They've got a handful of good defenders on their team. And one of the things they do is they move the ball around and actually play good defense on the defensive side. So they're getting a lot of open shots and not giving you very many open shots. So, I mean, there's defense being played, but just defense looks different than it used to because the whistle blows every 5 seconds.
Well, yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah.
Because Bill Laimbeer never be able to play in this league.
Well, I mean, now you can create contact, you know, like – if you're sitting there doing like this, all James Harden has to do is like act like when he went up with the ball is that your arm was in the way and he hit it, you get the foul anymore. And
which
I know
weak.
They're trying to do away with some of that stuff and they're trying to fix a little
who
bit.
Who was
of that?
Was it Paul Pierce who used to pump fake and then jump into you?
Well, yeah. And
Kevin
Durant, while he was with Oklahoma City, kind of perfected that swim move where he would come up, he would like do a big sweeping motion down low and he would try to sweep into your arms and then go up to the J. And he got tons of foul calls on the 3-point line, you know, or on jumpers. They're doing what the rules are letting them do, man. That's why they're flopping. That's why they're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to you about a guy because I'm a Thunder fan. I go to about 5 games a year on average, sit up in the nosebleeds. Part of the court's blocked because the backboard's in the way. But hey, I get to go to 5 games a year, and I really enjoy it. When Andre Roberson went down for the Oklahoma City Thunder, obviously, this changed some things. Now, from the outside looking in, you say, well, it's Andre Roberson. Like, the dude can't shoot. He doesn't score that many points. Like, he's not a superstar. But, like, when you watch what he was doing, it was because, like, defensively, he was, like, a defensive player of the year.
Right.
And he did get a few points per game because he was a good cutter. And he's aggressive. Like, he's not afraid to go to the basket. So, yeah, he can't shoot the open shot. And as far as a shooting guard goes, you'd probably rather have Klay Thompson. I mean, I get that. But what he was able to do was with Andre Roberson being the style of defender he is and with the length he has, and then with Paul George being on the other side and Steven Adams being in the middle, you could totally compensate for the fact that Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony aren't playing great defense because Carmelo is just – I don't want to say that he doesn't try on the defensive end because I think he does try. He's getting pretty old.
Looks stiff.
Yeah. I mean, he can't chase people around like he used to. Now he's still got a lot of game left, but he's not the same guy he was before he was like 34 years old or whatever he is.
Yeah.
And then Russell Westbrook, he has the capability to play defense, but he likes to play that bounce around, try to steal the basketball, try to poke it out. Like he doesn't really try to play any kind of system defense. He just kind of a disruptor, and he's really looking for rebounds more than anything, trying to get an offensive rebound and a breakaway. But so what that caused was, with those three guys anchoring the defense, we were one of the best defensive teams in the league. So even though we weren't the best shooting team, we had enough shooting with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, and then Russ hitting those little wing jumpers and driving, that and with Steven Adams hitting down low, that, you know, we can score the basketball. And if we can keep you from scoring the basketball at a high rate, and especially on the three-point line and the perimeter, then it's really hard to beat us. Well, Andre Robertson goes down, and then you bring in, you know, these guys who you're like, okay, well, you know, we've drafted all these guys. We've developed them to be, you know, these lengthy defenders like Robertson is, who can, like, maybe hit the wing three or whatever. And you would think that one of these guys, like a Josh Eustis or you know, maybe even Terrence Ferguson, even though he's super young, would come in and maybe be able to be at least close enough to what Andre Robertson does to kind of fill the space to where it wouldn't be that big of a slump without Robertson in there. You know, like, yeah, we're not going to be as good maybe, but we're not going to, like, drop off.
Right.
Well, didn't really work out that way. So they started trying to bring Alex Abrines in, who's not really good defensively, but he can shoot. It's not really working. And it's like, you're trying to figure out, like, why is this, like, why are these guys, like, just not working out? Like, what's the deal, and why are they struggling? And then the Thunder go out and get Corey Brewer. Corey Brewer shoots like 18% from the three-point line, which is like trash in the NBA. He's not a good jump shooter. He's skinny. He's old. He's like been in the league 11 years. Yeah,
he's Florida. He was Florida, wasn't he?
Yeah, he played under Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
And you're like, how is bringing Corey Brewer going to help at all? And, man, he looks pretty solid out there. And it's because he does something that these young guys aren't doing, and I think if they would do it, the team would be totally different. That's, he plays with a lot of energy. Like, he hustles. He's not afraid to be out there with the starters. You give him the basketball, he's not looking around to see what he should do. He's just cutting with it. He's just taking off. Like, you give him an open look, he's like, I shoot 18%, but that means I don't miss always, so I'm shooting. And he just shoots. And I'm like, you know, if these guys who have been coming in and trying to fill in for Andre Robertson but haven't been able to, will just pay attention to what Corey Brewer's doing. He's not more talented than you are. But what he is he's not afraid to just run out there, and he's playing like he's as much a reason as Russell Westbrook is that they're going to win or lose this game. And he does it just like, you know, like at the end of the game, did you ever like that kid in high school maybe who like he wasn't really good enough to be out there with the guys, but they'd bring him in every now and then. And he's just hustling his tail off, and he's
Rudy,
like,
man.
And he's like fouling real fast because he's just running into people because he's hustling, but he's not really playing smart or anything. Well, now, Corey Brewer plays smart, don't get me wrong. That's his level of hustle. He comes in like that kid who's just pumped to be in the game and, like, maybe, like, drank a Red Bull or something. And he's coming in with all this energy, and he's just disrupting things. He's making plays. He's getting dunks. And then the next thing you know, it's like he's rejuvenating our guys because they're like, this is what we need. Instead of that guy that's just standing in the wing, scared to do anything, and all. And it's like he's taking chances and all. And it's just fantastic. Now, they're playing tonight against the Spurs, and I don't know if he's having a good game or a bad game. And the only thing he's played three games, and the game that he played the best in and started in was against the Suns, and they're terrible. So Corey Brewer might not, you know, we might not love him as much tomorrow as we did today. But one thing that you do have to love about him is, like, even if he's not the guy, you want your guys to look at him and be like, this is what I want from you. This is what you need to be doing when you come in. Hey, your minutes need to look like his
now
minutes.
Now imagine if that dude could average 30 points a game and 10 assists like this myth named Michael Jordan. Because that's what Jordan did.
Jordan didn't run around like Captain Insane.
But he motivated his team. Albeit sometimes he was a jerk about it, but still.
Yeah, he was. Do you know who Michael Ios Jr. is? I think that's how you say his name. He's a Sports Illustrated photographer. Like, probably Probably one
you,
of the.
How do you know this?
Because I read like an article, man. Read magazines.
Okay.
Read magazines.
Who writes an article about a Sports Illustrated photographer?
Here's the story. Michael Isles Jr. What he's talking about is, you know, he did a lot of covering of Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan didn't have a good relationship with a ton of different people, but Isles said, you know, for some reason, you know, Michael would like talk to me, and like he was cool with me. And he's like, I don't really know why. He's like, because I always thought he was kind of a jerk to everyone. And he told some stories of things that he witnessed Michael Jordan do when he was in the league. And it's just like, it's made it really hard to like that guy. Like, apparently, like, Luke Longley and Bill Winnington walked by, and he's like, you see what they give me to work with? 14 foot of beep.
That's a valid point that he makes, though.
But he says it, like, and they turn around, they're like, thanks, Michael. You know, like, he was a jerk to his teammates. Dude, the way Arnold Schwarzenegger around. Was a jerk to Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, but he may have been joking around, man. It may have been like one of those things where he's just like,
he's just competitive, and he's from that old school of competitive people that talks trash and means every word of it.
I like it. I like the trash talking.
I don't hate it. I actually know guys like that, and I love being around them, man.
Larry Bird, best trash talker of all time.
And meant everything he said, like, meant all of it.
Here's the thing. They say that, like, he used to, during a timeout, he'd walk over, before the timeout was officially over, he'd walk over to the other team and say, ball's coming to me, and I'm going to hit it right here. And he would. You know what I mean?
What was the big lineman the Cowboys had? Was it like Larry Taylor or something like that? Just giant guy? What was his name?
Larry Allen,
yeah. There's a story about Larry Allen that when he'd come to the line, he'd go, choo, choo, and make like a train noise. And one of the guys on the Raiders, he was telling this story. He was like, Larry Allen would do that to you. And he said one time he told me, he goes, Emmett's coming on my left. And then he said he just blew me up and like Emmett broke on his left.
Yeah. I used to do that sometimes in when I played is I'd walk up. Now granted, it was never at the beginning of the game. Like I had to know that I could handle this guy.
Yeah.
You know, but like one time I walked up and it was fourth and game was on the line, so we had to go for it on fourth down. And I walked up and I said, y'all really think we're running anything but the quarterback sneak on you guys? And our center was another senior at the time, and he was ticked off, you know, that I did it. But now we picked it up, and I look cool, you know. I mean, it looks like one of those moments. But it was very few that, you know, it happened like that. Yeah. And so I'm kind of wondering if, like Larry Bird, how many times he told the other team he's going to hit that shot on him. And then, but you know what I mean? But that one time that he did is what everyone remembers, you know?
Well, you know how many times he went over there and told him he was going to hit that shot and he believed he was going to hit that shot?
100%.
100%.
I agree.
100%.
Yeah, he was pretty good too, you know, at it. The best was when he, 3-point contest, and he comes out and says, hey, just go ahead and put my name on the check. These guys are playing for second. And then doesn't even take off his warm-up suit and just smokes everybody.
I mean, admit it. We like our athletes confident and cocky, right?
I agree.
All right. So why don't you like Baker Mayfield again?
I don't like Baker Mayfield because he has no reason to be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. You take what he was expected to be compared to what he ended up being. I'd say he had a lot to
talk about. Okay. First off, that whole walk-on thing is misconstrued.
How many people want the Heisman Trophy? How many people get to go sit to try to be in line for it, you know, multiple years and actually get it? Like, that's a big deal.
Okay, you won the Heisman. But this whole that he's a walk-on that won the Heisman, mm-hmm. and all he had scholarship offers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you're the most highly recruited quarterback
in college. He walked on by choice.
I know, but even if you're the highest recruited quarterback in college, winning the Heisman still is something to be pretty cocky about. It means you were the best all year long.
Well,
and everybody agreed.
Number one quarterback in college in 2001 was Vince Young, and he never won the Heisman.
Mm-hmm.
but he got to raise the crystal ball, unlike Baker Mayfield. And that's kind of where I'm at. My thing is
I bet Baker's football career will last longer than Vince Young's, though. He'll be in the league. He'll be in the league. He'll be in the league whether he
okay,
starts or
but,
not.
Okay, but lasts longer. Okay, so did Chase Daniels. Who's a better football player, Vince Young or Chase Daniels?
I don't know. Why is Vince Young chilling at the crib?
Because Vince Young decided to try and be a starter and not back up somebody for a career.
Why is he looking for a job right now? Any job.
So. Think he'll go XFL?
I mean, are they really going to get this thing going again?
2020, man. I don't think they will just because I think
That'd be like Coke coming up with Coke 2 again. You know, Coke 2 was the thing that
I think he was
the
just
biggest
trying.
Letdown in marketing history.
I think McMahon's trying to capitalize on the players kneeling, is what I think. The whole political controversy around the NFL, he's trying to capitalize on.
That's a crazy roll of the dice. Like, yeah.
Vince McMahon has no intent of running a league. He has every intent of
selling franchises.
Selling it. Doing exactly what Trump did.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Because Trump did just that. Was it USL? USFL? Whatever it was. Anyway.
I mean, there was an XFL at one time.
No, the XFL kind of dwindled out. Back when they picked up Herschel Walker and Jim Kelly. And they picked up quite a few players. They were taking these guys from the NFL because they were paying them more.
Hmm.
And what ended up happening was they ended up getting bought out or something like that. And I think that's what McMahon's looking at. I think he's just looking for a quick payday.
Yeah.
You know, get some investors in, commission the league. The other thing that's probably helping McMahon out is Goodell. Did you see him running his 40? Did you see that?
In the office.
Yeah.
Dude. Like a 5'2", wasn't it?
5'4".
5'4".
Respectable in a
Not
suit.
Not bad in dress shoes.
No, he had running shoes on. Right. Yeah, but he had a suit on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not, you know. But how do you think that came about? Some intern's like, you run the 40. And he's like, all right.
It had to be like just combine talk, people talking about it, and Goodell probably popped off and be like, heck, I could run that, you know. He probably saw what that dude from OU, Orlando Brown or whatever it was, probably saw what he ran and was like,
what'd he run?
I think he's still running. So apparently, like, he goes to, you know, like, he looked good all season for the Sooners, and then he goes to the, you know, the, what do they call it? The T-shirt Olympics or something like that. They call the combine stuff. He goes to the combine and, like, his vertical was terrible. He bench pressed 225. He's like 300 pound lineman, you know,
uh-huh.
Bench pressed the, what is it? 225 that they do. Yeah. He did it 14 times. 14 times, Josh. Now I'm not going to talk too much trash because I don't know that I've ever even got close to doing it once. I'm a little man.
You don't weigh 300 pounds.
But I played high school football with kids who weren't athletes who could throw up 225 14 times and then start their set. Like, so he just – every his vertical, his 40 time, everything was like just garbage. And it kind of – everybody's like, is he even an athlete at all? Like, or is he just a big guy? But the thing is he looks good. So, like, when he's on the field, it's like, okay.
Well, and that's,
did he have a bad performance at the combine? Or did he just look good on the field because all he's got to do is take one really quick step back and to the right and then and he's not really blocking with his arms,
here's
probably.
The thing.
He's probably blocking with his size.
The combine, you know, you look at that stuff. Obviously, you want a guy. Well, Darius Hayward Bay. If speed were all you needed, then that dude be a stud. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Just because guys train for the combine, like they train to run the 40 and the shuttle drill and jump higher. That's all they do. And it doesn't translate to the field. You know what I mean? And so good for him. I mean, I'd rather have a guy like that come in and just like, hey, man, I'm a good offensive lineman, but these, you know, here's the thing. Here's what I bet would happen with this kid is I bet 225 14 times, you probably laugh at him, but then you put 450 on and he probably knocks it out six or seven times.
Yeah.
Because that's how he benches. He benches with a ton of weight, so his muscles aren't conditioned to do a ton of reps, you know?
Well, and it's quite possible that, like, at his size, I mean, he may not be athletic, but he may not need to be that athletic if he's big enough.
No, and exactly. I mean, that's what offensive guard's for anyway. Mm-hmm. For the non-athletic. I mean, in reality, the way they really kind of look at it is your bigger tackles, an ideal offensive line is your big tackles go to guard, your big tight ends go to tackle. You know what I mean? Because you want that athletic guy at tackle.
Are they not pulling guards anymore?
Yeah, but that's why you want a big tackle.
Yeah.
Tackle's the more athletic position on the offensive line. Your smartest guy is the center. He's the Tom Brady type of lineman. He understands every he's just as smart, if not smarter, than the quarterback is on defenses.
I want to say it was Jimmy Johnson that said that when you're going to go build a team, he says, you go get you the best left tackle you can get, and you start there.
Right. But typically the best left tackle is either a big quarterback or tight end. Lane Johnson from OU, now he's the left tackle in Philadelphia. Played quarterback in high school, huge quarterback in high school. Brought him in, and he has the footwork because he played basketball and ran track and all that in high school. And so, and that's kind of the way they look at it. They look at it like, okay, we want the 250-pound tight end in high school because he can move his feet, he can run around, he can catch the ball. So he's got good eye-hand coordination, he's got good feet. We're going to put 30 pounds of muscle on this 250-pound kid. And then make him a left tackle. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's kind of the theory behind it. And then you go get a good tackle and put who's 300 pounds in high school blocking the edge, and you put another 20 pounds on him and move him down into guard. And then you've got, you know, an offensive line that can actually move pretty athletically.
Yeah, because Chris, the guy I was telling you about that had the epic shower in that cabin he built, He was a guard, but he was a footwork guard. He was athletic.
Did he play guard in high school?
He played tight end. He was a tight end in high school, and when he came to OU, they put the weight on him and moved him to guard, and then he stayed at guard all through his NFL career. I think he played center some, and he played left and right guard.
Yeah. So, but
played tight end. He was actually a center at OU, I think.
Okay.
And like I said, I think he was more of a footwork kind of a guard.
Well, if he played tight end in high school, then he has the footwork, because that stuff's not.
Yeah, Chris is like crazy athletic. In fact, now that he's out of the league, he's leaned up quite a bit, and it's like, you're like, dang, you know, like you look like a different kind of athlete, you know. It's like,
dude, we need to bring him on the podcast.
One of the funniest ever met in my entire life, dude. It's hilarious.
Maybe we can bring him on March 25th.
He's real smart, and he's got a real good sense of humor.
You get that? March 25th.
March 25th.
3:25. Falcons blew a 30-25.
That's messed up. Edit that out. Get that trash out of here. There's no way to recruit someone to come on your podcast in your daughter's bedroom, man.
Hey. It's a studio right now. She doesn't pay rent.
Yeah. It's a studio, yeah. Anyway. The dream, that's what they say. That was one of the things that they criticized Mayfield as saying. They were like, they asked him, you know, like, how's things going? He's like, living the dream, man.
Who said that?
Just Mayfield, Baker Mayfield, you know. And they're like, living the dream is like one of like corniest like sayings, you know.
Yeah, I would say that at the combine, that's probably pretty corny. But that's the thing, like the whole, he did say, was it like, no other quarterback, you know, what other quarterback in the draft is going to turn him around?
Yeah.
Very Johnny Manziel-esque.
Yeah.
Let's wreck this league together. Like, come on, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just.
But you know who else had a mouth like that? Was Joe Namath.
Okay.
You can't just say that he's like Johnny Manziel because Johnny Manziel was a
donkey.
I mean, you got
He'll have a longer. Well, he. I mean, I don't know.
If
he
Johnny Manziel. Here's a huge difference between Johnny Manziel and Baker Mayfield. Drugs.
No, you're right. You're right, and I think he'll stay in the league longer than Manziel simply because he'll know the playbook better. And I do think he'll probably get caught partying. But I think
Johnny
he'll learn.
Manziel's
from.
Out there like living like Rick James, man.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like the thing is like Johnny Manziel gets in trouble for partying.
He's trying. He's trying to like clean up his
image.
He's
not coming back.
He's gone on television and said that like he finally has like realized that he has a problem.
Okay, good job, dude. Guess what? 3 years too late.
Yeah, I don't really care about his NFL career, but you know, you'd hope that you know he actually does realize he has a problem and does something about it. Though it ain't good to see anybody suffer with that kind of stuff, even if they seem like they're a terrible person.
I enjoyed seeing him fall flat on his face too, honestly.
Because he's an A&M player.
That's a big reason.
You Texas guys, man.
I know, man. Petty. We're so petty.
Yeah, well, if I was a Texas fan, I'd be pretty petty too.
It's all right.
It's been a rough go the last few years.
It's all right. It's coming back.
Yeah, well.
It's coming back.
Well, as far as like tying all this together, we've talked football and we've talked basketball, so I say we gel the two together. Juju Smith-Schuster of the Pittsburgh Steelers is recruiting LeBron James to come play for the Steelers.
The Steelers?
Yeah. Nah. It's been a hilarious Twitter thing going on because, you know, there's the big Le'Veon Bell holdout. Le'Veon Bell said, if you slap the franchise tag on me, I'm going to retire.
I thought he just came out and said he's not sitting out the 18th season.
I
hate the franchise tag, by the way.
I think what they've decided, or what he's decided, is the best move for him is, you know what, I'm not going to sit out. I'm going to get this money. But since y'all are putting the franchise tag on me, I'm going to explore free agency. And you're just going to have to buy me, or someone else is going to get me. Because he's a free agent in 2019. So he's kind of telling him, he's like, look, man.
Yeah, but if you put the franchise tag on him, he can't go anywhere.
Not in 18, but in 2019 he can.
No, because you can slap the franchise tag on him then, too. And you can slap the franchise tag on one player, and it makes you have to pay him. You have to pay that player the average of the top five players at that position.
Well, the way I understood it, he was going to explore his free agency in 2019.
He's been exploring his free agency, and that's the thing. They keep slapping the franchise tag on him. That's what I hate about the franchise tag.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. If I, you know what? It's a stupid rule anyway. Because mm-hmm. Me personally.
But would you pay a running back?
No, but you can't be mad at him for wanting a good deal because he's only going to get one or two of these negotiation opportunities in his career.
Yeah.
And so you slap a franchise tag on him. To me, a running back should come with a higher penalty with the franchise tag. You know what I mean? It should be you've got to beat the top guy by 10% or something of that nature because that's – because you slap the franchise tag, I get you for a year.
It's not fair to the player. I thought the way the franchise tag worked was, it worked for that season. It's like, we're going to pay you the franchise tag so we can work our money around to where we can give you a lot of money, but it's not over. It's just for this year, so there's no guarantee behind it. But we can pay you. But that was the deal. But I didn't think that it kept you from being able to.
No, that's what it does.
So
now you can't go out and.
Well, you can't just hold a player hostage.
Yeah, you can. That's what the franchise. You can do it with one player every year, and that's what the franchise tag. The fact that they've put what this the third one. Second is the second or third one?
The second. I don't know if it's the third.
So to me,
because he's not been in the league all that long, so.
So to me,
he's probably playing
if you put the franchise tag the first year, fine. You pay him 5%, or you pay him the average of the top five players. So the average of the top five running backs, X amount of dollars. That's what he makes that year. You put him on it the second year, you're now getting into 20% over the highest paid running back. Third year, 30% over. Fourth year, 40% over. So you now it's getting to the point where now you're paying this dude 40% higher than the highest paid running back in the league. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but back to the question about, you know, would you pay a running back?
No, that's the thing.
From the perspective of a football team that has the talent they have and looks like they're kind of Super Bowl ready, you know, you don't want to lose this guy. You don't want him to like.
Did he ever get suspended for drugs?
Yes, he's been hurt. He's okay. He's had two knee surgeries, and he got suspended for drugs at least once, maybe twice. Once was because him and LeGarrette Blount got busted in a car with weed.
Right.
And then I think the other one was on he may have, like, not shown up for a drug test. Or I could be getting – him and Martavis Bryant have both had issues. And I get them confused on which one was what.
Yeah.
But I do know that there was one time where he had, like, a 4 or 5 game suspension because him and LeGarrette Blount were in a car together and they found weed on him or something like that. But
well, that's why he's not getting the extension, dude. Well, he hadn't finished. This is the first full season he's had, isn't it?
Here's the thing. It's because he's a running back. In the league, running back has, like, the shortest lifespan of any right. other position on the field.
Which is why you shouldn't be able to throw a franchise tag on him.
And I agree with that. But, you know, from the team's perspective, you got to understand, like, he's not just trying to get paid. He says that he wants to set a new standard in the league for what running backs get paid. He's got a number, and that number is, like, really, really, really high. The Steelers offered him something somewhat close to that number from what I heard, and he's like sticking to his gun, saying, like, no, I'm worth what I'm worth and all this stuff.
Have you ever heard of supply and demand?
Well, and here's the thing, and here's what I'm getting at, is as a running back, he's not going to get that money.
Nope.
But he wants it, and the reason he wants it is because he says it's not just what I offer as a running back, it's what I offer as a receiver. So here's what I say.
You're a running back.
Well, that's where I'm going with this. Why not just say, you know what, I don't want to be a running back anymore, I want to be a receiver. Now, if you want to, like, have me come from receiver and, like, and run the ball, I'll do that because I'll do whatever play you call for me. But I want to be listed as a receiver, and I want to get receiver money
yeah.
because you're splitting me out wide enough
Guess what?
That I'm as much a receiver as I am a running back, but they're getting paid twice as much for three times as long.
You know who tried that?
Who?
What's his name? Tight end. Plays for Seattle now. Was it the Saints?
Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham tried it and took it to court. Court said, nope, you're a tight end. Franchise. Same thing. Franchise tag. He said, okay, if you're going to throw the franchise tag on me, you pay me the average of the top five receivers because I split out 59 or 60% of my plays. I'm split out as a wide receiver. You know, I'm only in like 30%, 30, 40% of the plays. I'm in on the line as a tight end. I'm playing receiver most of the time, so you're going to give me receiver money. They took it to court and he's a tight end, homie.
Man, I hate it because, you know, running backs probably my favorite position on the whole field. I love watching running backs do the thing. Especially when they're like Le'Veon Bell and they have a running style that you can kind of see what they're doing. Like, a lot of these guys, you know, they're just like, they're hitting the line so hard and so fast that unless you just understand blocking schemes and you can read a hole or read a defense and stuff, like, if they break through the, you know, through the offensive line and make it into the secondary, like, you just know that they got through.
Yeah.
But with, like, Le'Veon Bell, that little pause and that little quick step he does, like, you're actually getting to watch him work in the backfield and seeing him do things, you know. And it's like, granted, it's not the same as what Barry Sanders used to do, but you're as involved because you're involved. As soon as he gets the ball in his hand, you're already excited.
But you could make the case now that it's running back by committee everywhere you go now.
It should be running back by committee too.
I agree.
Because the fewer so touches not, they have, the healthier they're going to be.
Right. So you're not putting as much work as in.
If you ride a running back into the ground, you are a poor offensive coordinator.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So you're not. So the point being is Mr. Bell, you're not worth what you think you are because you're technically only playing half the plays that a Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith play.
But when you see what he does with those half of the plays, okay. He starts looking worth it because he is. I mean, there's games that are
100%
he's why they won.
I agree. No, he's a great running back.
So
and he should get.
And
paid.
As a receiver, he's a ridiculous mismatch for anyone that has to get sent out there with him when they spread him out there.
No. But he's not a receiver because I'll take any lockdown corner on him.
What ended up happening, though, is Juju Smith-Schuster really wants LeBron to come play for the Steelers, I guess. And it started off with he had a jersey made that said King James on it with number 23 and was like, hey, LeBron, come play. Well, then he puts out another tweet. It said the reason the Steelers haven't made a move on Le'Veon Bell is because they're still waiting to hear back from LeBron James.
LeBron would be a freak. He was a freak in high school.
Yeah, I can only imagine that if you had him in that tight end position that he – I mean, you just have to think that because I know basketball players look a lot skinnier like once you get
he's
up next
small,
to
him. He's smaller.
But here's the thing is he
– He looks bigger on TV.
All basketball players do because they
except
they do workouts to make themselves that way. I guarantee you if he went and got into a football – regiment workout.
Oh, he'd be stacked.
He might be like fast like Jimmy Graham and those guys, but like strong like Kelce and Gronk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he'd definitely be a freak if he played football, of course. But the thing is, man, I don't know. It's hard to tell because he flops and cries so much. Like one shot across the middle.
My first question was like, you know, first time he flops whenever the defensive end gives him a swing move.
Or come across the middle and you know, some
gets laid
Luke Kuechly type dude sitting there waiting for him. And like, then how good is he going to be, you know?
Yeah.
Now, he does get fouled in the NBA more than probably any player. You know, and that's the bad thing about LeBron is because he's 6'9", 240. When he does get fouled, the ref's like, even though it's a legit foul, it's like, yeah, but that guy's like 5'11", 150, and so how can – you know, so.
Yeah, if you want to see in the NBA, like, the difference between who gets foul calls, watch these centers and these power forwards who are big guys, not the finesse players. Watch when they're coming down, all the contact that's happening versus when, like, one of these little guards gets slapped on the arm.
Yeah.
Like, Steven Adams got pushed to the ground.
Oh, Adams gets roughed up a lot.
He's been punched, like, multiple times
because
he aggravates people so bad.
Yeah, say, you want an award for best trash talker? I bet he could put it out there pretty good.
Well, and it's just the little things he does. Like, I think he's one of those guys that he never doesn't give you the little elbow pinch or knee, you know. But he's working on you, and he's like he's forcing you to be tough. But people get frustrated, man. They outright foul him.
Yeah, because
like
it's a weak league, man.
And then the refs let it go, and it's like, all right, man. Like, I get he's probably not innocent on the whole, like, fouling thing, but, like, that was blatant. Like, that was a retaliation. Dude, like, elbowed him in the chest or elbowed him in the chin. Right. And you'll see Steven just kind of shake it off and move on. Craziest thing, though, is you know who Terrence Ferguson is? Okay, he's our rookie guard. Terrence Ferguson – did you ever play NBA Live 95 on, like, Sega Genesis?
Yeah.
Remember the basketball players all look, like, super lanky on it?
Uh-huh.
That's Terrence Ferguson looks like that in real life. He's real lanky, but he's pretty tall. Him and Steve Adams run into each other in the Suns game, and they bang heads or something. And, like, Ferguson immediately, like, just goes to the ground, and Adams, like, goes immediately to the ground, but not because he's knocked out. Terrence Ferguson is knocked out. Steven Adams goes to the ground, puts his hand on his chest, and says, "Come here, like you need to get here immediately." I think I cracked his head.
Yeah,
you know, and you know they run into each other, and it's like Ferguson hits the ground like he ran into a brick wall, and like Adams is just like, "Oh, you all right, mate?
Yeah,
you gonna be okay?"
He's pretty cool. We were sitting there waiting for Norris when Norris was with the Norris Cole. Yeah. Was with the Thunder. We were sitting there waiting for him to come out, and Steve Adams came out and talked to everybody. And he's just one of those funny dudes that, like, just cracks jokes with everyone, you know, and all that.
Oh,
so
yeah, he's the best interview. In fact, all the little Thunder beat writers and stuff, they can't wait to get to Steven Adams because for a couple of reasons. One, the Thunder notoriously don't treat the media very well. Like, they've got very tight lips. They don't like the media to know anything that's going on. And it's part of their player culture. They want to draw players in by letting them know, like, all that, like, other stuff that other teams, you know, you'll have to put up with. Here, we kind of protect our guys.
Right.
So if you've got something going on, it's never going to get leaked out. If we've got guys who are bigger in between each other, no one's ever going to find out about it. Like, all this different stuff, the Thunder keep it tight. And second, you know, like, if you're going to talk to somebody, you want to talk to the best player. Well, Russell Westbrook does not like the media. He treats the media the same way like Popovich treats the media.
Yeah.
He told Barry Trammell one time, he was like,
yeah, Trammell's a chump though.
Trammell said, what's the matter, Russ? Do you just not like us? And he goes, no, I just don't like you.
Yeah. Like, well, that's Trammell. No one likes, Trammell's a chump.
Yeah.
Like, no one likes, no one should like him. He's a two-faced punk.
Yeah. Well, but then you get Steven Adams and like, he gives you gold every time because he says something funny or does something funny or replies hilarious, or just the fact that he's wearing a camouflage hoodie and he's from New Zealand and, you know, like he just like all these other NBA guys, you see them and like it looks like they're going to a fashion show at the Geek Fest. Yeah. And then you got this guy that comes out and, you know, he looks like he's about to go bow hunting.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
No, he's super funny, super cool. And one of the coolest things he does is when little Leslie McCaslin comes up to interview him, he always like bends over. So instead of her lifting the microphone up, he gets down to her level.
What a gentleman.
Just a good guy.
What a gentleman. All right, man. That's it. That's about an hour and a half.
All right.
Thanks for coming.
No problem.
Welcome
man.
Back.
Be glad to be in here again. I can't wait to get Austin on here so that we can talk about some things. We had a good dinner the other night. I thought we had a pretty interesting conversation. I feel like I like talking about sports, but man, it's fun when we can get out there and kind of get out there on the cosmic level sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think it'd be good. So. But yeah, we'll definitely. I think Mike comes back. I think he's actually back in town this weekend.
Yeah, see, we haven't overlapped in a long time as far as like me and him being on the show at the same time.
We haven't been able to get one of all three of us at the same time on live.
Really?
At all.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm working on it.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it's just one of those things. But he's back, so if he's back then
Does he wear the crown? He should wear the crown.
I don't know, man. I say no.
Can I ask you, like, is this like a costume crown, or is this like the jewelry store at the mall, like where you can get weird stuff, like the giant?
Unfortunately, it's a costume crown.
Because here's the thing, like this is a hip hop trend waiting to happen.
But he's not hip hop.
I know, but like you think at some point, like people are just gonna start wearing crowns.
Biggie did. That's what I'm saying.
Nobody will touch it because Biggie did it.
That possibly.
And here's what I want to see. I don't want to see like the big crown. I want to see like the little crown. You know, like the cartoon, like the little fat king with a little tiny crown on the side of his head. I want to see that. I want to see like the King Koopa crown.
Oh man, we'll work on that. But yeah, the crown fits Mike. Like I said, I have my doubts about it until. Till the logo came out, it looks good. It looks good. I think it captures the man, allergies kill me. Captures the personality of the group pretty well. But anyway, topofthedudechain.com. Thanks for watching or listening or whatever you're doing with this stuff. I'm out.
See you.